Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Possible Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Yes, The Possible Mind is the positive mind. And the thing that makes the positive mind possible is understanding. Now, who's most difficult to understand? You think it's difficult to understand people who are very angry? Usually not, because they're telling you what they're angry about. The very difficult person to understand is the person who doesn't want to be understood specifically, and that person is the very private person. There are people, many of you are such people, who believe that privacy is tantamount to godliness, that being able to be self-reliant, independent, private, self-sufficient, self-supporting is what it's all about. Weren't we taught that? Doesn't nature teach us that? Doesn't in our history, weren't we taught that you've got to be able to survive on your own without your families? You got to make it on your own. You got to stand up for yourself. Well, how far does that go? There's a growing epidemic. Yes. There's a growing epidemic of young children who have been coming in to see me, who I call the intensely private children, or intensely private people. Why is it a growing epidemic? It's kind of interesting, because more and more I keep seeing children who have mastered, through the use of computers, they have mastered a world that they've created where they can now live in it almost exclusively. And then take that world that they've created and turn it into acceptable forms, such as good education and schooling and learning and intelligence, which their parents admire. The other part of it is that the children who are the intensely private children are, the thing about them that is so amazing is that if something were to happen to them where they actually started getting crazy, you kind of wouldn't notice it, because you just consider them private. So privacy, as my friend Tim would say, is a great value, to be private. But how far is enough? How much is too much? What about you people who are trying to have relationships with people who are intensely private people? Now, there are many forms of this intense privacy that I'm talking about. One is, somebody who's a regular relationship, and you have a husband or a wife, and your husband and you shared everything together, and then something took place during your relationship. One of the two of you started nagging. And you nagged, and the other person kind of took it, and they fought you, and they argued with you. But after a while, they just considered the best way to deal with you is to shut up. And they become quiet. And now, you have a relationship where there are two people. One is being the nagger, and the other is the naggee. But the naggee digs into a hole. They go into a cave, and they become very quiet, and they don't talk anymore, and they don't relate anything anymore. So that's kind of a reactive privacy. I've seen that happen to couples, where usually the man no longer talks to his wife. He doesn't want to. He just sees anything he says he's going to be wrong. Women frequently do that with their husbands. Whatever I say is going to be wrong. And they become quiet, private. But that's not exactly what I'm talking about today. I'm talking about something that's a style that develops in early childhood. A style of being private. In psychiatry, we have a lot of words for it. They mix back and forth between schizoid personality, or in the Enneagram, the 5 personality, the withdrawn personality, a number of these. But, regardless of the words, let's talk about the dynamics of the personality. What makes a person so private? Now, how private is private? Private, you like to be alone. Emotional coldness, detachment, kind of reduced affection. somebody with a limited capacity to express either positive or negative emotions towards others. Limited, you know? I mean, they do a little of it, but it's limited. Consistent preference for solitary activities. Very few, if any, close friends or relationships. And a lack of desire for more. Indifference to praise or criticism. So now let's get the picture. A very private person stays very private by stopping you from being able to pull them out of their shell. Therefore, they cannot be responsive to praise or criticism. Because if they're responsive to praise or criticism, they're going to try to earn it, and then you own them. So in their privacy, they want to protect themselves. Don't say anything good. Don't say anything bad. It wouldn't make a difference. They take pleasure in very few activities that are external activities. They're indifferent to social norms and conventions. You know, generally this kind of person is a kind of person who might not wear the perfect clothing when they go to a party. They may wear something that looks a little odd because they don't care about social norms. They don't want to be accepted by society. They're private. And then there's a lack of desire for a sexual experience with another person. Well, that's a question because, you know, they could have a desire to have a sexual experience with another person. But relationships to the very private person is very different than any other relationships. The intensely private person has relationships with people on the outside by incorporating them into their world, not by letting them be separate. Get this idea. Two people, right? One is intensely private. He meets a young woman, and they have a nice date, and she likes him very much, even though he's very private. He's very intelligent. And they form a relationship, and she, because he doesn't give much feedback, makes up all kinds of things about him, about how he feels, and she could say, think whatever she wants to think. He's not going to disprove it. She may fall in love with him. She may like his standoffishness because she's so used to men who are showering her with gifts and favors and buying her things and, you know, stuff like that. And she's, you know, more standoffish. She wants to. So she falls in love, and in her world, she loves him. She sees him. She understands his idiosyncrasies. Two people. But not in his world. In his world, she is a part of him. She's almost inside his belly. She's to be used as he needs it. It's like a residual food that people would have. You know, like a little hunger pack you put inside your body in case you get hungry, like fat. You know what I mean? In case you get hungry, in case you're starving, you kind of pull it out and do whatever you want with it. So relationships to the intensely private person is not a relationship with a person on the outside. It's the outside person taken inside you. You ever see a spider web a cocoon around a fly that it caught? And it gets this, it weaves a cocoon around it, and the fly is now dead, and the fly is to become food later. That's what love is to the very intensely private person. They have a storage. They have a little supply of love. Call on it when they want. And the more distant the relationship is with the person, the better it is because if they're staying away, they're not going to be invasive, and then you can make up anything you want. So let's say you're a woman who's an intensely private person, and you want to, and you fall in love with somebody. You meet this man, and you don't even have to know him. He doesn't have to be available. He could be married. He could be not available. You take him into your world, and you have all kinds of fantasies about him. It's like playing house in your own world, but it's all about you with this fantasy of the person, not the person itself. Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. In case you just tuned in, we're here to teach you about the way people function, especially the way people love. And today we're talking about the intensely private person. You see, the intensely private person has kind of a pervasive pattern of detachment. They neither desire nor enjoy close relationships. including being part of a family. The intensely private person tends to shed their family. They don't want to be part of the family. They want no one to have power. It is a position of absolute power. You can't get anything over me. They almost always choose solitary activities. They have little, if any, interest in having an actual intimate relationship with someone else, which would have the demands of an intimate relationship. They take pleasure in very few, if any, activities. They lack close friends or confidence other than first-degree relatives. They appear indifferent to the praise or criticism, and they show this kind of emotional coldness, detachment, or flatness. You know, it's just kind of like, there it is. It's just present. Now, why wouldn't we look at this and say, hey, oh, and you know, they never make eye contact. It's a thing about eye contact. They don't let you in. So they avoid your eyes. But then you would think, oh, you could spot them. No. These intensely private people walk around the world. They could be very social. Now, I know, doesn't that sound like a contradiction? See, they could be social in the world. They could do social things. For example, architects. Architects in general, bookkeepers, architects, it's a private business. It's a business designers. It's a business that you sit in the privacy of your own space and you work on a project. And now you work on a project and you draw the lines and you work on your computer and you're alone. And it's a perfect profession. Bookkeepers, accountants, these are some very, very private people. If you meet most architects, you'll see that they're very private people. You know, Frank Lloyd Wright was a classic example. Very, very private. But because they're in the world with their design, they have to come out of their world to socialize to get you to give them the business. So they open their world in an artificial way, and they will be social to get your business so they can take it back to their cave and do their work. And they come up with some of the best stuff. Because, mind you, without the distractions of the rest of the world, I mean, without needing love and putting all your attention on any one task, you could do a greater task than anyone else can. Without needing to go out and play, a child can be great at math. So parents who don't want their children to get in trouble frequently will look at their child, who's a very private child, doing his homework and getting great A's, and playing with the computer, and they'll say, ah, at least he's not running around and there's no trouble, and they go to the comfort of it, the comfort of the privacy. But that privacy can be such a disturbance. Let's look at the childhood. They often report as children that they never felt safe in their families. They felt in danger of being overwhelmed by their parents, and they started looking for a way that they could feel secure and confident. Now, get this. If you're a child and you have an overbearing parent, mother or father, usually one or the other, ones that hover, you know, and they attach themselves to you, how do you protect yourself? They're about to eat you up, your parents. They're about to take you, and they're about to own you. So you protect yourself. They retreat from the family into their own private space, mentally, physically, emotionally. They turn their attention away from their personal and emotional needs into something objective. They develop a hobby. And you'll usually see some kind of a hobby. Very often it's just the computer, but there's a hobby within the computer. So they now have the relationship with the thing itself. Now, these young, intensely private people typically spend long periods on their own, quiet children who shy away from playing with others. Instead, they occupy their minds and imaginations with books, practicing a musical instrument. Now, that's a big deal, practicing an instrument over and over again. Very private people. Bob Dylan is a very private man. He sat there and he played over and over and over again the same thing. He would just practice over and over again in the privacy of his world. When I was a kid, I remember we were at a coffee shop and Bob Dylan, who was a neighborhood boy, came in And he sang some music. And we listened, and we said, get out of here with that voice. Go away from us. Because all he ever heard was his own voice. Of course, we were wrong. He had a great voice, but it was so unique and so distorted. But it was... In fact, did you ever watch American Idol? And then you wonder, where did these people believe that they had a good voice? Many of them are these kind of very private people who practice in the basement of their rooms, and they don't have anybody to tell them it's no good, so they do it over and over again wrong. And then when they finally get up there and they get on stage and they do it, you look at them and you say, huh, what were you thinking? Because there was nobody to tell them. And very often, if somebody's very private, and they're doing a performance in the basement of their home, sometimes they have a mother, and mom likes them to be in the basement. Mom likes them to have this private relationship. You know, I love my son. And you think it's kind of an unusual relationship you have with your boy who's singing these songs in the basement and dancing while he plays funny guitar. But you kind of, at least he's under control. So you encourage him, and then you hear his music, and you tell him, it's great, it's great, it's great. What's he supposed to believe? He's a little boy who's laying there playing his music over and over again. He believes his music is great. And then that mother takes him to American Idol, right, where suddenly the world hears him and says, this is bizarre. And you'll very often see that with these very private people, when they get busted, when somebody says to them, this is terrible, they can't believe it. They know you're wrong, because all their life they've believed other. This is Armand DeMille with you with the personal mind, with the positive mind here on WBAI. I'm talking to you about very private people because I want to ring a bell. If your kids are very private, don't let it slide. But again, we're talking about the reason for a child becoming private, and part of the reason is the invasion. They feel this invasion is possible, and you know they're probably right. If you're a young woman, and you have a father who doesn't get along with his wife, and he starts to go to you as your source of nurturance, and he talks to you, and he touches you, and he gets, I'm not even saying sexual yet, but you feel the invasion on one hand, yet you also feel the betrayal of your mother on the other hand, and you start pulling away inside so that you can't feel anything. And you know, eventually you can't even feel the hands that are laying on your body. You pull away, and the only way you could pull away is into the world of privacy. While the imagination of a very private person can be a source of creativity and self-esteem, living there almost exclusively fuels their anxieties about themselves and the world. They become social phobic. They become more and more afraid of the world and being out in the world, because what would happen if they go out into the world is going to bust the balloon. The world is going to say to you, hey, private you, everything you believe is not true. And you get hungry for contact. You, a part of you feels lonely, and another part of you knows you can't let anybody near you. Thus, very private people do not expect anything from anyone. They give up. They want to be left alone to pursue their own interests, unimpeded by anyone else's demands or needs, especially their emotional needs. The worst thing in the world to a very private person is having somebody with emotional needs who turn the emotional needs on you. You're completely befuddled by this. What are you doing screaming at me and saying you need me to do something? Leave me alone. It's like terror. Get out of my world. That's the way they feel. It's as if they were saying, I won't ask much from you if you don't ask much from me. Independence, or more accurately, non-intrusion, is therefore sought by very private people as a way of attaining safety and the feeling that they have control over their lives. How many of you know very private people? How many of you are very private people? We'll be taking your calls later because we want to hear about this from you. Not being intruded on also allows the very private person the time to develop something to bring to the table when they eventually do feel like they connect with people, you know. They may learn the piano principally because they enjoy it and it gives them time alone, but it also bolsters their self-esteem and provides a niche for them in the family. Music is a potential bridge to a lot of very private people. But they're psychologically stuck in this kind of separation from the world. So you don't know what you could do to help. You know, it's very important for you to identify a very private person. You must know the following things about them. Number one, they're introverted. This is, you know what I mean by introverted as opposed to extroverted. They're kind of internal. Cut off from the world about a reality in an emotional sense. And all the striving is directed inside. All the everything that they have, all the fire, all their sexual energy is directed into the internal private. They're withdrawn. Narcissism. Now, very interesting concept, narcissism. It arrives out of the predominantly interior life that the very private person lives. His love objects, like I said, are all inside him, and moreover, he's greatly identified with them so that his sexual attachments seem to be inside himself. He seems to have this sexual ability inside himself. In fact, frequently, masturbation is very, very easy and preferred to personal relationships because then you don't have to deal with anything. The intense world, and it's like if you take something in from the outside, you've got to make sure it has an exit and it can't stick with you. So it's a world of narcissism. It's a world that's built around you, and doesn't include anyone else. It has this self-sufficiency to it. Critical, critical thing. They have a self-sufficiency which does without real external relationships. You don't need them. You can depend on yourself. I am alone. I was at a wake the other day, and I was with a bunch of older people, and there was a bunch of people who were playing this game. A game is about if you're the last person on earth, how do you fare? And it's a long game, which I'll teach you one day here on BAI. And this one particular woman said, if I were the last person on earth, I would be spending my entire time searching for somebody else. And her husband said, oh, I wouldn't. So the people in the room said, why wouldn't you? He said, because I would relish the time alone. I would love to be alone. That's two very different kinds of people married to each other. One dying to be alone, the other one trying to be attached. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. A few more minutes talking about this very private people. And, of course, you may want to be able to access this information by going to the website of the WBAI.org, where generally we will have up within a day a repeat of the program, which you could listen to. And if you can't get it there, sometimes it's down, you can go to my website, thepositivemind.com, and you can get it there. A couple of more issues. Sense of superiority. When you're a very private person, you have a sense of superiority. It kind of goes naturally. When one has no need of people, and therefore they could be dispensed with, you could dispense people. There often goes with a feeling of being different. The sense of superiority has nothing to do with the kind of grand sense. You know, I'm greater than everybody else. It's not I'm greater. It's just that I'm independent. I don't need anybody. I am superior. If I am superior to others, if I am above others, then I do not need others. It doesn't mean I feel better than them. It means that I'm at a distance from them, a safe distance. It's a feeling of being vertically displaced rather than horizontally at a distance. loss of affect. Very private people, they have no room for their emotions anymore. The emotions become invasive. Little by little, they let them just kind of go away. And they become quiet, more and more quiet. Of course, there is a loneliness that comes in, because somewhere in there, every human needs to be connected. But you incorporate the loneliness as your plight for light, almost plight for life. It's almost like you wait to die. The very intensely private people, they have, some of them are very wealthy. Some of them are Howard Hughes, you know, very, very private. They're very successful. They have a lot of things, but their life is a life of insulation. That would be another good word for this personality. Now, their self-concept. The way they are outside, on the outside, they look compliant, they look stoic, they look non-competitive, they look self-sufficient, they look like they lack assertiveness, and they look like they're feeling inferior. They look like that, because they're very often shy. But inside, they're cynical, inauthentic, absolutely feeling empty, robot-like, and they have this hidden feeling of superiority. In their interpersonal relationships, they're withdrawn. They seem withdrawn. They seem aloof. They have very few close friends. They feel impervious to others' emotions. They feel afraid of intimacy. But on the inside, they're exquisitely sensitive. They're deeply curious about people. They don't know how to touch them. They're hungry for love. They're envious of other people and their spontaneity and their need to connect. They're intensely needy of involvements, but they can't have it. And they're capable of excitement with carefully selected intimates. Love and sexuality, mostly. Externally, if you looked at them, they look asexual. Sometimes celibate. You know, just, there's no sexuality. It ain't there. Free of romantic interests. Averse to sexual gossip and innuendo. You know, they're not the kind of person who will talk about it. But inwardly, they are secretly voyeuristic, and they have great pornographic interests, especially with the advent of pornography and the internet and on television. They are very big fans of it. They could spend hours and hours and hours in pornographic ventures and on chat sites and so on and so forth, doing stuff that's sexual. They're vulnerable to erotomania. Now, erotomania is where they fall in love with somebody who does not return their love, but they are just totally in love all the time, and they think about it. And they have this compulsion towards perversions, towards something odd, something different, something unusual that keeps them going, and they just keep focused on it. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I point this out to you, my friends, because when I say to you, if you see an intensely private person, don't just think self-sufficient. Think, you know, he's a wounded person who's afraid to be in the world. And if you have it in your children, if that's where you have it, you know, just don't be comfortable that you've got a good kid. Sometimes it's nice to have children that make noise. Hey. I'll be back with you in a little bit. This is Armand DeMille. Come back to you, play a little music, and we'll take your calls. Michael.
Vuelvo al Sur. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM. It's so beautiful to see people joining up with other people and making things happen and connecting. Like some of these efforts that you hear, the social efforts, where people work with each other and get together and they get the joy of joining each other. But I think we lose, each one of us loses when a person decides that the only place they can go is to be in a shelter. I feel robbed, you know. I mean, I don't resent it. I understand you have a right to go there. But I wish you could join me. I wish you could hold my hand. I wish you could work with me. I wish you could help me dig the ditches and plant the flowers. But I know you're afraid. There's a problem with these very, very private people. And there's a problem for psychotherapists who treat them. One is that underlying these personalities, very often, underlying it, it's like a house of cards. They're barely holding themselves together. Because, mind you, it's kind of, when you live in a private world, you hold it together with kind of like with spit. You're kind of holding everything together, and if one part breaks, everything falls apart. So very often, people become invasive. Now, if you become invasive with somebody who's very private, what are they going to do with their mind? They were trying to run away. They're trying to be safe. Where are they going to go? And very often, they go crazy. Crazy is the next haven. Crazy, psychosis, schizophrenia can often be the next refuge, the next place to run to. There, nobody could really touch you. So if a person is very private and you think that the way to get to them is to become invasive, it's not true. Many therapists make a mistake. Let's say you're a therapist who has a great deal of charm and loving and so on and so forth, like I do. And a person comes along who's very, very private, it's very easy to get them at first to like you very much. And if they like you very much, they violated their own code of privacy. But the trouble is, if they feel a real attachment to you, they might just, find refuge in a more disturbed state of mind. So a therapist who does not spot the very private person and the depth of the pathology very often makes the mistake of hugging them or, talking to them and saying how nice they are, giving them compliments, which they have to run away from. So it's very important to be able to spot this, and that's one. Another treatment, but there is treatment. I mean, therapy works. Therapy is fabulous because it becomes, if the therapist understands what he is dealing with, he or she is dealing with, it becomes an invitation. Now, I tell you the story of Plato's caves. Once again, when I was a kid, when I was young, I was 20 years old, I worked at the Rehabilitation Institute in Mineola, where I was working with 14 schizophrenic boys and girls, and it was a rehab place. These are kids who had mental disturbances. It wasn't only schizophrenia. They were different disturbances. And I told them the story of Plato's caves, and in case just to remind you of Plato's caves, Plato tells the story of men, all of mankind, is in a cave, and it's in a cave, and behind it is this fire. And the fire behind it is casting shadows of the people who are sitting in the holes in the cave against the walls of the cave. So people who are sitting in these caves, all mankind, are sitting there and they're afraid of their own shadows. You've heard of that expression? That's because it's their shadow, because they see the shadow and they think it's the gods getting angry. So I better not move. Every time I move, the gods get angry. So now, here is all of mankind doing this, pardon my simplification of the story, and one man gets up, and he goes outside of the cave, he goes around the fire, he sees the opening to the cave, and he sees a beautiful world out there. So he comes back in, and he says to everybody, listen, it's only a fire. you could come out and come to the world. He'd never told a story before. Amazing. And so, and I'm telling this to young boys, of course. And so they all say, look at what you're doing. You're making the gods even angrier because they're seeing his movement against the wall. And he's making gestures, and they see the gods getting really angry on the back wall. They're telling him, sit down, stop doing what you're doing. And here's a man who just discovered that outside the cave is this beautiful world. So now here comes the question, the essential question in Plato's dilemma. He said, if you know of a world that's magnificent and you want to bring it back to people who you love and you want to invite them to go with you, but they fight you, do you, as a teacher, spend the rest of your life trying to show them the way, or do you go out into the world and live your life? There's a great dilemma. And it's a teacher's dilemma. Because for many people, if you become a teacher, you know your job is to stay there and keep teaching. But also, someone has to live the life. So that's the question. You throw that to some teenage boys and say, what do you think he should do? You think he should talk to them about the fire, or should he go out and live his own life? 3,000 years, Plato, right? 2,000 years. 3,000 years. Plato had this question and has been presenting it, and philosophy students have been pondering the depth of this question for ages, until one young boy in my group says the following thing. He says, why don't you put out the fire? And there it was. There it was. The entire thing was kind of, the whole thing came, you know, put out the fire. There'll be no more shadows. Therapy, very often, in working with people who are very private people, is putting out the fire. It's not dragging them outside. It's not telling them how good the world is. It's just getting them to not be so afraid of the shadows. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're going to take your calls, 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. I want to hear from you about privacy. Privacy, the intensely private person. 212-209-2900. We'll take one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
Could you speak up a little louder, please?
Yes, I'm speaking about as loud as I can.
That's good now. Yeah, but we need that sometimes on these phone connections.
Okay.
But thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So you're on air.
Oh, okay, okay. My name is Roger. I'm from New Jersey. And I was listening to your program, and it sounded kind of similar to myself.
You sound like a pretty private guy, eh, Roger?
I think I am, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no relationships with anybody?
I've had quite a few relationships.
Mm-hmm.
In the past. Not right now, currently involved with anybody.
And do you feel lonely at all?
Not really.
See, that's the question. And that's, thank you. You know, Roger, that's it. I mean, because when you're this kind of, you don't feel lonely. You give up lonely. Lonely, is that right? I'll be alone. If nobody came to get me, I may stay in this room forever.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I guess at times I have felt lonely, but, I mean, at this point in my life right now, I don't. I date, so I don't know if that's about being lonely or if it's just about just have some social activity.
Yeah, to date, to have some social activity.
Right.
And what's it like? What are most of the people you go out with like? If you were to say, well, you know, they're pretty shallow, don't you think?
Yes, some of them are, and then there's, I mean, I tend to, you know, be involved with women that I have some kind of connection with on an intellectual level, at least.
Very important to you.
Mm-hmm.
Very important.
Yeah, that's
right?
Real important, yeah.
I mean, sex you could do by yourself, but a relationship with somebody on the intellect, you need the other person.
Right.
Do you ever do any internet dating? Do you ever do any stuff on the internet?
No, I'm not an internet person.
You're not an internet person at all?
No, because I've never really had problems like meeting women I just never really met the right woman that I, you know, felt like I could, you know, really be totally intimate with.
That's a common thing. Now, Roger, let me ask you something. If there were one thing about you could change, what would you like it to be?
I probably want to be more outgoing, more socially outgoing. Because I'm not really, really big on the social thing. I can do it, but I'm not. It's not like a priority.
You want to feel that connection to people. You
right.
want to feel like you want to go out there, not just do it for the sake of doing it, right?
I fully
understand. I fully understand. By the way, do you play any instruments?
I have attempted numerous instruments. Unfortunately, I haven't been very good at it.
Must have been someone around to tell you you weren't good at it. But it's fun to be learning, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I enjoy it. I, when you said about the music thing, about private people, you know, getting into music, I've been a big jazz fan a long time in my life, and that's really like a passion. That's really my passion.
Jazz is a passion, huh?
Yeah, it's my passion. I mean, I've been through all kinds of music, but, I mean, I've stuck with that since I was probably 13.
And let me ask you something, Roger, since jazz seems to be a part of my life as well. Where, if you were to go into the small areas, the corners of it, what would you think? Who would be your musician, your jazz musician? Who's one of your stars? Give me one great piano.
Oh, there's so many.
But give me one.
Let me think. I'll tell you who's really here. Kenny Barron.
Kenny Barron.
Tommy Flanagan.
Beautiful. I see. I see what you like.
Cedar Walton. Rick
so you Garland. Like the energy. You like the energy.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Roger, thank you for calling in. Do you know the very first day that Kenny Barron came to New York? He came next to. I met him. He came. His brother Bill Barron played tenor saxophone. You should, since you're a hobbyist, you should dig up some of Bill Barron's music.
Yeah.
I grew up on Bill Barron because Bill Barron was my neighbor, and he kept playing the same tunes over and over again. And Lee Morgan used to come over, and everybody used to come over, and I used to hear this stuff over and over again. And I remember Kenny Barron when he first came over, and he sat down at the piano, and he played for the first time, and I was just shocked that anybody that young could be that proficient and that magnificent.
Yeah.
Good.
Beautiful art form. I love it.
Art form. Do you ever get out and go to the clubs, Ron?
All the time.
Good.
All the time.
So there's a place where you connect. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Sure. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand.
Hello.
I think I have a good one for you.
Go ahead.
I am involved in a long-distance relationship.
Perfect.
With a woman who is, I believe, intensely private. She is extremely successful in business. She has her own corporation. It's extremely successful. She is a successful writer. She is the president of different associations. And so she's out there, but she has always walked these roads alone. We met socially one day about half a year ago, and there was just no doubt at first glance that there was a recognition between the two of us that would lead to an intimacy that neither of us had ever recognized before, and that's exactly what's happened. We speak all the time, see each other about once a month, and over the past, let's say, 6 weeks, she has had some personal problems with her family. Illnesses with one family member, some legal problems with some other family members. And during those times, she has withdrawn completely. We'd go from speaking 3 or 4 times a day to maybe one text message from her a day saying, working things out, we'll call you when I can. Boom.
That's a nice thing about it, because she is so intensely private, she could actually schedule it with you. So let me ask you, it's good enough the way it is for you? It's fine that she's at a distance and this is acceptable to you?
Well, we're working on that. You know, intimacy is something that's it's a process, not an event. So we're working on that. That said, I kind of felt, I felt a strong desire to be there for her, even if not physically, to be there for her, to help her, give her a shoulder to lean on, give her some advice, whatever, during these terrible times she was going through. And I almost felt as though the opportunity to do that and the opportunity to grow within the confines of the relationship had been taken from me because she had withdrawn so severely.
Sure. And that's the idea. But mind you, how smart she is. Because if she allowed you in, you would break completely her whole defensive system. She doesn't want to go crazy. She wants to be able to be take care of herself and to be able to take care of her business and keep you as an outside something that becomes a treasure to her. The minute that you become the invader or you become a part of her, then she's no longer safe. There's only one way with people like that, and it's not that you constantly say to them, I want to be with you. It's to make room on the ground next to you and let them have access to it, and if they want it, they'll sit down. And if they don't, it's perfectly okay. Mm-hmm. Now, with that, without the invitation, because the minute you start trying to get them to say to them through guilt or something, I really wanted to be there for you, that's all. You begin to disorganize them, and they have to get rid of you. So be careful. Guilt is a horrible thing to, it's like one of these knives that go through the heart of somebody who is a very private person. Never use it.
Well,
it's always an invitation.
When everything was over, we spoke about it, and I was very, very careful not to be judgmental, not to lay any guilt on her, and just told her how I felt and why would she act this way. And we came to a real good, positive understanding. You know, what it came down to is we just need to know a little more about one another and how we handle and process different situations. Her girlfriend, on the other hand, was saying, you didn't let him in to help you? Don't screw this up. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, you see, so there it is. Now she has to get rid of a girlfriend. You see? Hey, listen, congratulations. What's your name?
My name is Rich.
Rich, nice to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure. 212-209-2900. We've got time for another call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi. Hello?
You can speak. Yes, hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
I'm with my radio on. I'll try to turn it off. I just wanted, first of all, I love your show.
Nice. Thank you.
The first time that I listened this. And I have a son who I think have all the characteristics that you are talking about.
All of these privacy characteristics,
huh? Exactly. And my question is, how can I do to help him?
Well, it's kind of important. What does the school think about him? Does he go to school?
He is a brilliant kid. He is always in the honor student role.
And is he social in school?
I don't know about that. He has a couple of friends only who he hangs out all the time. And when I say to him to participate of any sport, he doesn't want to.
Yeah. And where is Dad?
In New Jersey.
His father is in New Jersey?
Yes.
So does his father live with you?
Yeah.
And do you get along with his father?
No, really.
No, I didn't think so.
No.
So here's the job. What's the problem with your husband?
I think he pushes him too much to do whatever he wants him to do.
So it seems that you and your husband have to heal your relationship so that your son doesn't get thrown in the middle of it.
I see.
So the focus, if you want to know how to help your son the best, make things work better with your husband. Now, I mean challenge them, make it work better, which it includes
If it doesn't work, then you maybe you'll get out of there. Are you from the Dominican Republic?
No, from Ecuador.
From Ecuador, okay. So it's difficult for you to break relationships. Is your husband from Ecuador, too?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, so it's very difficult to make breaks. And also, your husband's a very private man, too, isn't he?
Oh, yes.
Yes, that's what it sounds like. So he's very private also. Very difficult stuff. So it's got to be an invitation to dance. You have to kind of invite your husband to come out to be closer to you first.
Uh-huh.
And not teach him so much about the boy. Don't put the boy in the middle.
Yeah.
Teach him that you and he could have more fun together. And when you and your husband get along better, your son will feel freer.
Oh, I hope so.
If not, you know, you can always find somebody to talk to about it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and have him checked just to make sure he's not, you know, going off the wrong end.
And when I ask him, what is wrong with you? What do you want to do? He says, I don't know.
For sure.
He doesn't know what to do.
I understand. He'll develop his voice. But like I said, get close to him. Try to see what you can do to heal the things with your esposo.
That sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you for calling.
Sure. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. And as I said, thepositivemind.com.
In the morning, all by myself in the night.
Jimmy Rushing with Dave Brubeck.
With a table and a chair, so unhappy there, playing solitaire. All by myself, I get lonely, watching the clock on the shelf. I'd love to rest my head on somebody's shoulder. I hate to grow older, all by myself. By myself, I get lost.